Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Messina. We're presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, Matt Penny is back in the building for the second part of our college coaching jobs ranking. Penny, we went so long on the last one. It's a lot to go through, though. So I figured we'd come back for a little bit of a second part here. We were going something like 4 minutes per school, and I figured this would be a good like hour long podcast for us. The top 12 coaches, coaching jobs in college basketball. That'd be funny. If I made you rank the top 25 coaches in college basketball, that would be even funnier because I would need like
for somebody, not for me. Yeah,
I would need a direct line to your funny text messages. Yeah. I feel like
no. That would be bad. It's good we're doing part two. I do feel like I never left, and it's just a very grassroots basketball feel of kind of two in a day. You got a cliffhanger ending, and hopefully after listening to the last podcast, it riled up enough people, but they know the teams that were remaining, and they're saving their real hatred toward both of us for after when this one posts.
So this is a very difficult list to put together. I will say, though, the reason that we cut it off at 12 was that I personally felt that there is like a bit of a line when you go from 13 to 12. Like, I thought that that's where the tier breakdown was, to be honest. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, looking at it, it's probably we probably have two tiers left. And I want to say we probably covered the third tier and all elite. So let's not get crazy about saying this is a third-rate job. We're not. These are all outstanding jobs. These are just the top 12 or so that fall in that echelon of one and two.
Do we want to do like a quick little run through again? I'll give you the floor to do this of the things that we're looking at for when it comes
absolutely
to rating jobs.
Yeah, it's imperfect. Let's start there. But it was more program history, what the head coach is paid, location of the school, conference affiliation, fan attendance, if multiple coaches have won there, and ultimately job security.
Yeah, budget in general as well, I think, is a good one. Like, how much money does the university have, period? Fan base, again, is an enormous one. Recruiting base is an enormous one. Just a lot of different things to run through, and I think that I'll be very interested to see what the response was to that podcast, because we're recording back-to-back here. I don't know how angry I made all
I
of you.
Too. Yeah.
I will assume that all of you are just very kind and being very positive in my mentions.
You know what the funny thing about you is, though, is because you are on the other side of the globe and you're, whatever, 10 hours different, you post and then you can go to bed and then you wake up around like 4 o'clock, I don't say American time, but East Coast time, and you must be like flooded when you open up Twitter and the bell has a million notifications, so you don't have to like deal with it in real time as like they trickle in, like here's 3, here's 5, here's 10. You get hit with it all at once.
So like, here's the thing, I've been looking at Twitter a lot less recently. It's been great. Like, I really enjoy interfacing with people. But man, has it been great not to see that negativity all the time?
But you don't, yeah.
Like I really appreciate
it's the Batman thing, right? It's you die and be a hero, or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. It's like we're all going to become the villain in the podcasting world, and maybe this is the one that pushes you over the top. But if you don't read the negative stuff, it can never really set in either. It wasn't negative if I didn't hear it.
I really appreciate everyone who is very positive in my mentions and is very kind and, doesn't try to bring people down. Having said that,
the
NC State fans are coming, Matt.
Coming after you.
We know
your
list,
your show. I'm just a guest here. I don't know. I don't even have a title. This is the Sam Vecini Game Theory Podcast. So
Pack Pride's coming for us.
Say, oh, I had him 12th. I had him 12th. Sam bumped it down. He was the one who put it there.
Oh, my God. Penny, where is UMass on this list?
Just outside, 26th. I did my best to contain myself when we did talk about Syracuse, how UMass is the only team ever to beat him twice in a single season at the Carrier Dome. I bit my tongue, but now that we're part two, I need to mention it. That's my fun tidbit of the day.
Oh man, UMass would be
it happened because we play them in the regular season, and then the NIT, they hosted a game, so we had to go there. We beat them again.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Wait, were you on the team when that happened?
I was, yeah. It's my fifth year, my last hurrah.
God, did you you might have played in those games then if it was your fifth year?
No, I think I played in two games my fifth year.
Blowouts
and one was senior night. Yeah, of course there are blowouts. I don't know if I said this before, but on senior night they gave you like the frame jersey, and I had two of them. So I told the coach, I said, look, coach, I don't really want to do senior night again. I did it. I don't want it to be a thing. No, you're going out there. Go out there. So there's like four other guys and me, and they have their frame jerseys, and they gave me a clock. So there's my teammates holding their frame jerseys. Like, they're putting their finished basements one day, and I'm holding this like little handheld clock that says Matt Penny UMass.
Are we talking like a Flava Flav clock? Like a clock necklace?
It wasn't a necklace, but it was probably like that size. Yeah, like a really tiny grandfather clock that you put on like your desk or something.
Oh my God. Love it.
All the layers unravel on the pod.
Is this like a clock that was made for you, or was this like a clock that was just randomly in an assistant's office?
It wasn't like that was a Target being like, yeah, can you grab a clock for Penny? I don't know. I got to hand him something. No, it said like Matt Penny, UMass basketball or whatever. Graduate Matt senior. Penny. What are you still doing? On the back side says, what are you still doing here? Why are you paying for a fifth year, dummy?
Oh, my God. Okay. So let's dive in. Number 12, the Michigan Wolverines. So I think people might be a little bit surprised to see Michigan over like more traditional basketball powers like Villanova or Connecticut or Syracuse or Georgetown. The thing about the Michigan job, though, is that so many people now have had like a very real track record of success. Like Steve Fisher goes and like recruits the Fab Five and leads them to the national title game. John Beilein leads them to a national title game. Juwan Howard leads them to a number one seed. And where I can't even remember where they went. Did they go to the Elite Eight this year? Yeah, they went to the Elite Eight this year.
They lost with the air ball. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're now at the point where this is kind of a self-sustaining job almost. And I think that that's really, really, really an important part of why I think the Michigan job is as high level as it is. In addition to that, I will just note that like this has every resource you could want, like just every single resource in terms of money, in terms of like budget. It has like a pretty real recruiting base because of Detroit. Like it's a really, really high level job, I think.
All these Big Ten ones, I'm just going to defer to your expertise because being a Big Ten guy, also as the sustainability thing you talked about, number one recruiting class in the country for next year too. Juwan Howard, when he's hired, it was kind of, can he work the NBA thing? And he's done so in way exceed expectations, if that's even possible. And now bring in even higher level guys. They average 12,000 fans a night. The pay is good and on par with the upper tier of that league. I liked it a little bit more than Michigan State, but they're right there, neck and neck.
Yeah, it's interesting, and we'll talk about that versus Michigan State here in a minute, but like the Michigan brand is just like national. Like it is something that people care about across the country, and I think that that's a big reason why Juwan Howard has been able to go out and recruit in the way that he's been able to hit the ground running recruiting. Yeah, just a very, very high level job, I think. Like, no question about that.
And it's authentic, too, because sometimes you have a coach come in and he's selling the past and what they've done. Like, Juwan Howard was the Fab Five. Like, yeah, you know those guys that changed being cool in college basketball? Like, that was us.
Yep.
And to be able to go into a living room and also sell that he's a former NBA player and the guys that they brought in, it's not a difficult thing. We can also throw at that. The best football player of all time, Tom Brady, went to Michigan. There's just every available resource you can have.
Yeah. I would say that this tier also runs from like 12 to 7. Because I think that, and you're going to see that there are a lot of these Big Ten jobs in this range. Basically, all of these four top Big Ten jobs, I think, are very, very close. Like, you can make a real case for just about any of them, I think.
I totally agree with that. And there's a couple coming up here, which others may disagree with. And I don't necessarily think they're wrong either. This was more difficult from getting from here to 5 than I think it was getting from 20 to 12.
Yeah, I agree with that. We flipped this range from, like, 6 to 12 a lot. It's just really, really hard, I think, to kind of navigate all of these schools and all of the different things they bring to the table. So number 11 is Michigan State. Michigan State really cares about basketball. Like, Michigan State basketball is the show in town, even ahead of football, even though the football program has had very real success. And while Tom Izzo is synonymous with Michigan State basketball in a real way, Michigan State also has a real track record of success beyond Tom Izzo. It's not just Tom Izzo that has had the like level of success, even though Tom Izzo certainly winning, you know, or going to 9 Final Fours or whatever he's gone to is the big, you know, catalyst here. Having said that, Judd Heathcote was the coach before Tom Izzo, was there for 20 years, had Magic Johnson,
yes,
that helps, and won a national championship. So, like, Michigan State has a real, like, 50-year track record of success at this point, and I think is deserving of, like, a, like, in within this, like, second tier of jobs, like, being in that second tier of jobs.
And the support is unwavering, I guess you could say, at 14,000 fans a night. I'm more worried about who the next guy would be to follow Tom Izzo than I would at Michigan, I guess, because we are kind of getting into this iconish range of guys as we get toward the top, and it'll still obviously be an attractive job. I just don't know who's going to slip in and try to fill those shoes.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely right. The thing that I will also mention about Michigan State is when you talk to coaches in the Big Ten, like the two places that I feel like I hear most that you don't want to go play, even like above Indiana, like I hear coaches not like going to Michigan State and having to play in the Breslin Center and not liking to have to go to Purdue and play because Mackey Arena also gets extremely loud. Like those are the two above all that I hear like just exceptionally difficult to go win there.
The Izzone, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's real. Wisconsin's also a really good one. Like, you know, with Wisconsin and Purdue, like, just barely missed our list. Like, I think that you can really make a case for either of those two. Rutgers is also, like, a random one that Big Ten coaches talk about. But the two that I hear absolutely are Michigan State and then Purdue is also a really tough place to play. So I think that the fact that it's as hard as a place to play as it is, the track record is as long as it is, multiple coaches have had this ridiculous level of success. It's very clearly like a second tier top, you know, 12 job in the country.
Of the elite. You always have to kind of
right.
add the asterisk so the pitchforks aren't thrown at you too.
Yeah. Okay. Number 10. So we're into the top 10 now. Arizona.
Top 10. Yes.
Arizona just hired Tommy Lloyd. You take the lead on Arizona because I think that it's almost everything that you're looking for from a job, especially given that there is a relative dearth of jobs that are this high level on the West Coast.
I like them as a great spot on the West Coast. The school believes they have the resources. They want you to be good. They have 13,000 fans a night. They really paid Sean Miller. I don't know what Tommy Lloyd's contract is, but I'm sure it's on par toward the upper tier of this. Lute Olson won there. Sean Miller, he was kind of dogged a little bit for not making the Final Four when he was there, but still won. We've gone over that on past pods, multiple Pac-12 titles. And I believe Tommy Lloyd should win there. Of it can be a destination place, and you can dip into the talent-rich area like California to get guys, and has enough of a national appeal that you can get guys on the East Coast too that will pop up and end up at Arizona.
So the thing with Arizona is that it has now multiple coaches, very clearly. Like, Lute Olson is pretty synonymous with Arizona. And Arizona, like, look, it's not an exaggeration to say that they had a bit of a questionable transition out of the Lute Olson era.
Well, they did. And as soon as the words come out of my mouth, like, you can get a kid from New York, you know, okay, I'm all right. You can get a kid nationally. Yeah, they had some hiccups, yes.
Yeah, like... We've got Kevin O'Neill, we've got Russ Pinnell. By the way, shout out that Russ Pinnell year. They went to the Sweet 16, if I remember correctly, right?
People sneaky forget about that too. Yeah.
Yeah, like, and then Sean takes over and they kind of take off again, right? They go to, God, I think 3 Elite Eights, 2 other Sweet 16s. Really, really impressive run, and then the bottom kind of fell out due to the NCAA stuff here, and they've just now started to kind of figure their shit out again. But multiple high level track records of success here. You know, Lute Olson won a title, went to another national championship game. The history is absolutely real. The pros that they can sell, very real. The facilities, like, everyone that goes to Arizona says that, like, it's an unbelievable place. Like, going to Tucson, like, it, look, people in Tucson care about the Suns, but, like, it's still Tucson. Like, it's the only game in town for the University of Arizona. So, yeah, I think this is a really high-level job. I think that the fact that it's in an easier league, which, let's just be real about it, like, Pac-12, if you're a coach, going to the Pac-12 is more attractive than having to compete against all those good coaches in the Big Ten. I think that's what pushed it just slightly over Michigan and Michigan State for me.
Yeah, and as I'm trying to word this correctly here, it's not the – we were kind of knocking Gonzaga a little bit for their league being winnable, but also as a downfall. Like, the Pac-12 had a great year this year as a whole, late as it came on with UCLA and Oregon State, especially, and USC had their moments. So there's going to be quality wins that you get and quality games you get every single season. You don't have to worry about just running through the league from top to bottom. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the draft thing's a good point, too. It seemed for a long run there that every year, every other year, Arizona had a kid that was in the first round or slated to be the first round. They were never lacking for talent.
Okay. The next school is also a Pac-12 school. Number 9, UCLA. You had UCLA a little bit higher than this. The reason that I pushed you to move UCLA a bit lower, despite the track record of success and despite the fact that it's in beautiful, sunny Los Angeles, if not my favorite place on the earth, probably in the top 5. Los Angeles is just beautiful. God, I miss you, Los Angeles. I'm happy to be in Melbourne, but God, that's an aside.
Yeah.
UCLA's athletic department with the kind of ill-fated Under Armour deal and the resources that they have from the former pros like Kevin Love and Russell Westbrook have really input money into the program. They have beautiful practice facilities. Those are great. The Under Armour deal, they got it. Didn't necessarily work out as well as they were hoping, I think. Having said that, I don't mean to take shots here at the UCLA fan base, but, like, it's a little bit fickle in terms of if they're not great, then it can turn into a circumstance where people tend not to get to the game on time. and will just kind of filter in, and the atmosphere isn't as awesome. Having said that, like when Lonzo was there, that place was fucking rocking and it was awesome. Yeah. And it ruled.
Yeah, right.
Like, yep. It was amazing. But like, you go to Michigan State, like Michigan State's going to be fucking crazy if they're this year. You know what I mean? If they're this year's level of...
You have more options than Los Angeles, I would argue.
You do.
More social options. Yeah.
That is indeed correct.
That is a fact.
It's a great job. The location's amazing. You have incredible access to incredible players. Mm. You know, the fan base, the history is incredible. Like Jim Herrick won a title there. Ben Howland took the team to three straight Final Fours. You know, you have Kareem, you have Bill Walton, you have all of the guys who are in the NBA right now, like Drew Holiday that played at UCLA. I think that the weather, the location is the selling point over Arizona, in my opinion. But man, I will say this too, like you're going to feel the heat if you don't win. You don't go to the Sweet 16, you don't go to the Final Four like very quickly, you're going to feel the heat at UCLA because those expectations are real.
Yeah, when you have 11 national championships and John Wooden's success and pyramid of success, and there's different athletic department people now, but we could do a whole different podcast on the Ben Howland experience and the success he had there, and I guess it still wasn't up to that standard. You checked all the boxes I had. It's just always going to be considered a blue blood, especially for me. West Coast power out in the Pac-12. It's going to be, I'm not saying it's the best job in the country by any means, but when you start talking about the best jobs, it has to be in that top handful.
Okay. The next one is Ohio State. People are going to look at this and go, why the fuck is Ohio State ahead of UCLA?
Because you went there, right?
Probably. Here's the thing about Ohio State. You have literally everything you could ever want in terms of resources. Like every single thing imaginable that you want in terms of money, in terms of budget, in terms of practice facilities, in terms of just every single little thing that you need, you're going to get it at Ohio State. They will pay whatever the money is because they have so much money from the football program and from like all of these different little like monetary like things that they come in that are able to come in, that it is just an unbelievable advantage. On top of that, similar to Texas, if you're not great at Ohio State, like it's pretty okay. Like you're going to get real job security and patience at that job to kind of figure things out if you don't come in and just hit the ground running. Like at Indiana, you're going to have to come in and hit the ground running immediately. Honestly, I think at Michigan State, like those fans are probably going to expect you to hit the ground running immediately. At Ohio State, like nobody even looks at the basketball program until February.
No one looks, but there's a top seven job. Yeah. Yeah. What stands out for me, and I think I had them eighth initially, is you do, despite what you're saying, they do 2 years ago, the average attendance was 14,000.
Yep.
They pay their head coach. Multiple guys have won there. Jim O'Brien had success. Thad Matta had success. Chris Holtman's having success. You do have support throughout the entire athletic department. And didn't go there, can't speak to it, but I've been told a great college campus as well.
Unbelievable college campus. Arguably one of my favorites, given that I went there and I absolutely right. love it. But man, it's just incredible. And the other thing about this is like, look, I don't like the arena. Like Schottenstein Center is not very good. It's kind of cavernous. Like I think that that's the reason that like I had it below Indiana, which is still coming on this list. Like it's just like cavernous in a weird way to where like the fans, like you go to Duke and the fans are just fucking at the like court level, right? There's right on top
smaller,
of people.
But yeah.
Right. Fog Allen, it's just right on top of people. Like the Schottenstein Center is more of like an NBA arena to where everyone's kind of like pushed back a little bit and it's not as, you don't get that crazy home court advantage, unfortunately, that you get at a lot of colleges. But I just think that given the crazy intense resources, it's like knockoff Texas in terms of like college
Texas top five job. Yeah.
College basketball jobs. Like you're going to get every single thing that you need there. You're going to get time to do it. and there's enough talent there to where you can go out and get kids. Like, it's just kind of, it's kind of everything that you're looking for, I think, from a job. If you're looking for a job as a head coach, it just doesn't have that like crazy fan base and crazy home court advantage.
Yeah, just lacks that crazy blue blood pop, I guess, of the home court arena of maybe a place like Michigan State, where you said the fan base pushes it over the top on campus every day.
Yeah, and look, they've been to, I think it's like 5 national title games. Like, the history's there, too. You know, they have pros. Like, you don't have to worry about that. Like, it's easy to sell the fan base. You know what I mean? Like, it's...
Of course.
Yeah, it's a good job. Okay, let's take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back with the top 7. Okay, number 7, Indiana. Are Indiana fans going to be angry, or are they going to, that they're this low, or are they going to be like, oh yeah, like this is probably a little too high? Like, I can't tell with Indiana.
There's general anger anyway, I feel like, and that's part of the highs and lows of taking the Indiana job, that people do think that it's still the Bob Knight era and it should be as successful as they were during that time. So you'll probably have a mixed bag of highs and lows.
This is another job where I think we're still trying to figure out how good the job is in the post-Bob Knight era. And it's been a while, by the way. Like, Bob Knight has been gone for 2 decades now. It's kind of crazy to think that, but like, Bob Knight has not been there for 2 decades. And Bob Knight very clearly raised the level of the program to an exceptional, like, high. And because of that, a crazy amount of resources come in. Assembly Hall is a really great place to go watch a basketball game. The fans are incredible. They really care. Like, the fan base there is unbelievable. You're going to have guys showing up every single game, and you're not going to have to worry about it. They're going to pay. Like, Woj just reported that Indiana was willing to offer Brad Stevens like $70 million. They're paying Mike Woodson, I think, like $3 million a year. It's unbelievable. It's absolutely unbelievable how good that job is, given that, like, it is, like, look, it's not in the middle of nowhere necessarily, but like, it's in Indiana. It's in more of a rural state, but the state is so basketball crazy that it's a self-sustaining recruiting place too. This job really has,
you get those kids. Yeah.
I would say that, like, there is like a mini tier here from 12 to 8 for us. And then like 7, 6, 5 is another tier. And then the top 4 are a tier beyond that. Even like, I would say, like, this is Indiana's job is just exceptional. I think it's a really good job.
The Hoosier hysteria, the state is obsessed with basketball all the way down from youth to high school basketball games as well. Kids grow up, or should grow up, dreaming to play for Indiana. They've had some success, more success lately, with in-state kids. Mike Woodson hit the ground running, and we said he had to hit the ground running. He did, with a good staff and retaining kids, and just got Tamar Bates to commit. That kind of speaks to when a kid like Tamar Bates, who had an unbelievable senior season just now at IMG Academy and was committed to go to Texas and decommitted with a coaching change, to consider Indiana with everything that he had, I think also speaks volumes to the history of it. And now you have a former NBA coach, and they have all the pieces there. You have a rabid fan base that it's a top 5-ish job, regardless of kind of the facilities and what I would say is at times unreal expectations.
I'm just going to note too, Tamar Bates is really good.
Yes, he is. Yeah. And you know, my favorite part about him is he's gotten so much better. He played on Under Armour circuit with Casey Run GMC, and they lost a 17U year because of COVID stuff. When he played 16U, he's kind of just a mid-range shooter, but strong, tough. I liked him. Thought he's more of a high major minus kid. And then when he ended up at IMG this year, I was like, whoa, buddy, this is a different player.
Yeah. Like, Tamar Bates right now is number 44 composite, it looks like. According to 247, he ain't that. He is, I don't know if I want to say drastically better than that, but like, Ohio State has Malachi Branham coming in next year. I like Tamar Bates more than I like Malachi Branham, unfortunately,
yeah,
as a player.
well, with Tamar too, and maybe we talk about a draft pod eventually. He is this kind of culture carrier type guy where he plays so hard and he raises the level of intensity on the court on both ends too.
Like Kentucky has like Nolan Hickman coming in. I think that Tamar Bates is better than Nolan Hickman. Like, I think that Tamar Bates is like a top 25 player in this class. I think maybe I shouldn't say that, cause like I haven't seen all of the kids in this class necessarily as much as you have. So I retract that, cause I just haven't seen enough of like the top 50 kids.
No, it's difficult though, because no one really has, and you'd be lying to say you are. There are limited scouting opportunities and people have seen, I'm sure they've played on some national games, but you haven't seen the full spring and summer of all these kids and playing against each other too.
Yeah. Maybe the better way to put it is like Tamar Bates, like of the guys I've seen that are in that like 4 or 5, like borderline area. Tamar Bates is better than most of them, I would say.
Should be a difference maker there.
Yeah. Should be a very real difference maker there. Okay. Number 6, that's an aside. Louisville. The reason Louisville is here is purely like they pump everything into that basketball program. No coach will ever go wanting for anything that they could ever want at Louisville.
And the fans treat it like an NBA franchise.
Absolutely.
They're rock stars, they're celebrities. I mean, I don't know how you want to dictate the asterisks of vacated Final Fours and national championships, but they have a few. Yeah, 2, 3, 8 Final Fours, 10 Final Fours, whatever. It's a handful. The last,
you know what happened? You know what happened in those games? They won the games. I don't give a fuck about what they tell me.
They didn't do the Minority Report or Men in Black thing to erase my memory. So to me they still won the games. And the last two coaches there have won national championships too, if I'm not mistaken, prior to Chris Mack, which shows you're able to do that with more than just one head coach.
Yep. No, I think that's totally right. Anything else on Louisville? It's kind of like a simple one. Like it's simple.
Huge fan support. They pay their coach well. It's in a region where they can go out and get guys, and they have. And there's success, a long run of success. They've pumped money into facilities, into their dorms, into their fitness stuff. It checks a lot of boxes.
Yeah, we might have messed up not having them ahead of Texas at number 5. Texas is number 5. The thing about Texas is that A, they will pay an insane amount of money. B, the amount of money that they are willing to pay also filters into every single thing that they offer all of their coaches and staff. I don't know if you knew this, but have you seen the coaching staff that Chris Beard has put together at Texas?
Oh, man. You haven't been on Twitter lately, but I sure have.
Just an outrageous staff in every way, shape, and form. And the only way that you can get Chris Ogden to leave UT Arlington, Chris Ogden was making, you know, real money at UT Arlington as a head coach. Jarence Howard was considered one of the like up and coming great recruiters in the Big 12. Rodney Terry was making, I think the number was like 700 at UTEP.
This is the confusion of the 1.1 million. He's making that much there, and we're laughing though he's making more as an assistant coach now.
Like, and then they have like Ulrich Maligi, Bob Donwell. Yeah,
Ulrich is really good, who came with them. Bob Donwell, we're also missing that on the carryover for staff. I'm assuming Matthew McConaughey is still on as Minister of Culture. If there's a better staff, I haven't seen it.
No, this is the best staff in the country. And
you said that. I'm turning my phone off.
Okay. Yeah, I'll delete that. I'll delete it.
Or keep running.
This is an incredible amount of resources to put into a staff. The only way that you end up with a staff like this, like most coaches wouldn't even like ask to get a staff like this. They'd be like, oh yeah, like can we go out and get like one or two of these guys? The only way you can go out and get them is by putting like $4 million into the bank of...
Yeah, assistant pool, yeah.
Assistant pool, yeah, that's what it's called. My brain broke for a second. And say, go get whoever you want. And like, so, I mean, like, I'm sure you've, like, my text messages have blown up with, like, you know, hearing what Chris Beard got in his, like, the amenities that Chris Beard got, like, in his contract. I mean... It's going to be the amount of money that you get to go to Texas is unbelievable. The amount of resources you get is unbelievable. And you get all of this while having a job where people like care about basketball in the Big 12 for sure. And people care about basketball at Texas, but like, I mean, you're going to get some time because Texas football is everything. It's the only thing that like truly matters. The other thing is the downside of this is that, yeah, football is like the thing that matters, but from what I gather, like their home court advantage, like isn't awesome either, right?
No, just digging through the numbers, their attendance was under 10,000 a night 2 years ago. But going back to the Chris Beard staff real quick too, with him having the success at Texas Tech, it probably also forced the hand of, I'll come, but this is who I want for my guys with me in the assistant coaches pool. And they're like, all right, if that's the number, that's what it takes, like, we'll do it. And right. Talk about hit the ground running. Like, they've brought in guys immediately, and you're still in, and we said this about A&M, this talent-rich state that's home to dozens of Big 12-level talent players each recruiting class. And now with the transfer thing, a lot of guys want to come back home. Budget, resources, facilities. You have Kevin Durant as an alum of the school. It's right there. The fan support will get there if and when, and it's more so when for me that Chris Beard and the Longhorns get back to kind of this upper level of program and school basketball-wise that they probably belong in.
And then on top of that, like, you have all the recruiting budget you need as well. Like, it's not just like assistant pool staff. Like, Chris Beard's going to be able to go wherever he wants, whenever he wants to go get these kids.
Yes, he is. And I laugh because I think the article I read said that when he signed his contract, him and the athletic director were eating McDonald's breakfast in a hotel room. And then it said he signed for like $5 million. And I was like, I don't know how many McDonald's breakfasts he's going to have after this, but good for him.
Yeah, probably still many because Chris Beard is who he is.
It rules, yeah.
Exactly. But nonetheless, like, I kind of thought that like I'd have Louisville and Indiana ahead of Texas initially. The amount of money that they've shelled out this offseason in their coaching search, just like it has to push Texas to five. Like, I think it has to push them to the top of this like little mini tier.
It's five, and maybe in 3 years we revisit this list. It could be a little sneaky higher too.
Yeah, it could be. Okay, number four. And I think you could rank these top four teams in any order. I genuinely do. I don't want to get yelled at. So I genuinely believe you could rank them in any order, period. Okay. Duke is number four. And the reason for that is I don't think we know what the post-Coach K era is going to look like. And maybe that's like a little bit unfair, right? This is still a top four job in the country, unquestionably, because they're going to pour money into this program. It is absolutely a flagship program within the entirety of college basketball. And look, like, it had success before K got there. Like, K is not the first person to go to Duke and win games, right? Like, it happened. They went to
not
the
to, end. Not to this level, yeah.
Yeah, like, they went to the NCAA championship game under Bill Foster, like, in 1978. Like, it's not a nothing job. And I think that, like, it's still going to be successful long term. But, man, much in the same way that John Thompson casts a shadow on the Georgetown program, I think that Kay is going to cast a shadow on the Duke program, to where I just wonder what it looks like when he's gone. They don't really have like a guy set up next, which is fine. Like, you don't have to have the next guy set. Most of the jobs on this list don't have the next guy set. But I just don't know what it's going to look like beyond that. And that confuses me. I don't know what to do with Duke. The positives here are unquestionably that Duke has like arguably like the best amenities in the country. Outside of like one other program that'll be at number one and number two, even like Texas, maybe you could make a case of that.
Yeah, right.
You know, the home court advantage is unbelievable, an incredible home court advantage. Like, it's splitting hairs at the top here. It's undeniably just like, you don't, you can't go wrong picking one or the other. But this program is built on K, and it's hard. Like, it's hard to know what this is going to look like after, I guess.
They're so synonymous with each other, with Duke and Coach K. And you can make the argument for a couple other schools where we'll mention here shortly thereafter. But he's been there since 1980. So for me, I guess it would be recency bias to say for that long of a period of time, 40 years or whatever it is. But they've had 42 first-round picks. I think I counted 28 in the lottery, 5 national championships. We don't even have to run down the accolades of what they've been able to do. One of the best, if not the best, home court advantages in college basketball. They pay him plenty of money. I don't know what that number will be for the next head coach. But, yeah, just my hesitation is what it looks like for the person who has to fill Coach K's sneakers whenever that actually happens, whether that's a guy within the Duke family or not. It's going to be a tough thing to kind of establish your own spin on things, where if you talk a couple of these other jobs, immediately the new head coach can kind of say, we're keeping the past traditions, but this is the new way of doing it.
And then on top of it, I mean, look, like, this is, Duke is one of the 15 best schools in the country, something like that, like 10 best schools. I don't know what the rankings are, right? It's hard to get kids into Duke, theoretically. Like,
theoretically, yeah.
How much will that change if K leaves? Like, will we?
Yeah, it could. There are academic standards. You can't just get anybody in, and it is a little bit higher. I don't know how it balances with some of the other places we've mentioned. Definitely somewhat of a concern. I wouldn't call it like a crazy thing to worry about, but it does give you a little bit of pause.
Yeah, and when we're talking about this top tier, like, it's all splitting hairs. You know what I mean? Like, Duke has one of the, you know, two best fan bases in the league. It has a history synonymous with success beyond only one other school in the league, and maybe even like two or three other schools in the country. You're gonna get exposure if you go to Duke. Like, you're gonna seen everywhere.
Part of the brotherhood.
You're part of the brotherhood at that point.
Yeah.
The amount of money, the amount of resources they throw into recruiting, the amount of like players in the area, by the way, too, like North Carolina. You can go up the coast a little bit and find really good players. Like, Duke is also a national brand, to where even after K leaves, they're probably still going to be able to get players. So a genuinely elite job. I had it just at number 4, and I had it below, for instance, Kansas at number 3. So I'll let you take the lead on Kansas. What do you think of this Kansas job?
James Naismith, the inventor of basketball coach there and started the basketball program in 1898. Wilt Chamberlain is an alum. You have the allure of Allen Fieldhouse, 15 first-round picks since Bill Self was there. Like some of these others, they are the show in town. That's where people like really put you on this other pro athlete type of feel vibe. It doesn't feel like a college town. It feels like another pro team. You have a rabid fan base. Also gets very loud in there. And the level of success Bill Self's had, I mean, kind of speaks for itself. They average 16,000 fans a night. They pay him a ton of money. I think that for Bill Self, Larry Brown has won there. I think the next guy, it's, you never want to follow a legend like him either, but it's set up where if it were somebody, I'm trying to think of even like a name who could be, we don't have to do that right now, but it wouldn't be as big of a bump or an adjustment period as it would, I would argue, at Duke with like a Coach guy.
Okay, so the last coaches at Kansas, Dick Harp, which, what a name.
Wait, what year? What year was that?
1956 to 1964.
Okay, good. I was like, I don't think I know Mr. Harp. Okay. No offense to Dick Harp and his family. I just, it's a long time ago.
You don't know Dick, unfortunately. So he coached Wilt Chamberlain. So obviously went to a national championship game.
Would hope so, yes.
Lost by 1 point in triple overtime. It's like the greatest game in NCAA history or whatever. Next coach, Ted Owens, went to multiple Final Fours. Next coach is Larry Brown. Larry Brown obviously won a title there with Danny and the Miracles. Roy Williams is next. Roy Williams, obviously an incredible track record of success. Bill Self is next. Bill Self, incredible track record of success, national championship, 14 straight Big 12 titles. Like, it's a self-sustaining job at the end of the day. And then, like, after, if you go beyond Dick Harp, it's William O. Hamilton, who I don't know anything about. Let's just be very clear about that. But the coach before that is Fog Allen, who has the damn court named after him. So
yeah, that helps.
Yeah, like, look, it's just the reason that it's ahead of Duke is that it's all of the same amenities, all of the same home court advantages, all of the same resources, money pumped into the program, national brand. Maybe you can make a case that, like, Duke is the national brand of college basketball, whereas Kansas is like a top five national brand. I won't parse hairs with that. That's fine. But every single coach at Kansas has had a ridiculous amount of success.
Right, right. But, like, that's kind of, but we're saying that, though, I don't want to say it's unfair because Coach K's just been there for so long, but when you're there since 1980, it's like you didn't even have the opportunity for those next rung tier of guys to show that you can also do this at Duke.
Yeah, I get that. I think that's reasonable. I also went back to 1956.
Yeah, you dug. Yeah.
But, like, I totally get that, and I think it's, like, completely reasonable for you to bring that up. Number two, North Carolina. I'll let you take the lead on North Carolina.
I went back and forth initially with Duke, North Carolina, Kansas, what that was, because, yes, it is splitting hairs, and if those – I mean, well, North Carolina just did open. They kept in the family with elevating Hubert Davis. Duke and Kansas, the line would be – significant for really upper tier head coaches, maybe NBA guys trying to get those jobs. With North Carolina, the pay was very good. I'm sure Hubert Davis still being paid well. 20,000 fans a night, 7 national championships. You have the Michael Jordan affiliation. You have the mystique of the Dean Dome, the history of Dean Smith there. You get kids on campus and they can breathe in that this is the place that Michael Jordan played. The national championships were won. You're in a great area. You are the show. It's not a football school. This is a basketball school. There's everything that you would need as a recruiting tool in base at that school than I would say almost anywhere else than maybe the number one school on the list. I think it's very close with Duke, but I did give North Carolina a little bit of a nod.
I think all three of these are just so close. Like, it's really splitting hairs. The reason that I gave North Carolina the nod was just, like, the history of pros versus Duke's history of pros. And I think that as we enter an era where more and more kids only care about getting to the NBA, that it wouldn't surprise me if, like, North Carolina being able to pitch Michael Jordan, etc., is a little bit more effective than Duke, but Duke has also built, like, a national brand on, like, the one and done.
Right. Yeah.
It's,
I mean, you have Zion Williamson, you have Brandon Ingram, you have Jason Tatum. Like, they've been able to do it recently too, but sure, the depth of North Carolina with maybe more success through the years, and Duke was knocked on that for a while, but they've definitely turned the corner into being really good, productive pros.
And look, by the way, like, North Carolina has had incredible highs with two of their long-term coaches. Like, Dean Smith was there, wins many, you know, whatever, like, multiple national titles, etc., right? Roy Williams is there, wins multiple national titles, unbelievable success, etc. They had the down period with two coaches in the middle there, with Bill Guthridge and Matt Doherty, to where it wasn't as successful, right? Like, we don't necessarily know.
Talk about that, yeah. Right.
We don't necessarily know for sure. Like, this job has proven, maybe is the way to put it, that it's not a guarantee that you're going to win games every year in North Carolina. It's pretty close. Like, look, Bill Guthridge went 80 and 28 in his 3 years, tied an NCAA record for most wins by a coach after 3 years, went to a Final Four twice in his time. And then he retired. So, like, look, like, Bill Guthridge was not a bad coach, but Matt Doherty era didn't really work. And part of the reason the Matt Doherty era didn't really work was that Bill Guthridge, like, wasn't recruiting as well when Doherty got there. So I'm just saying, like, this job is not immune to downturns necessarily either, but I do think that there's a bit more of a track record of certainty that it will be good going forward now with Roy gone than I do that Duke will be like at a top five level with Kay departing at some point, you know, within the next 10 years. I don't know when Kay's going to leave, but five seems like a short amount of time for some reason to me.
10's a long time. Yeah.
I know. Even five is a long time, but like, doesn't seem like Kay is anywhere near stopping. Yeah, it's really close. Like, honestly, I mean, you want to rank Duke at two, I get it.
Yeah, there's downturns too, and the team we may mention next, like they've had their moments too where they haven't been as elite and top five teams, and Duke's had their bumps here and there too. They'll have down seasons, but again, just the history is always going to carry these teams and keep them in the same conversation, and it'll be hard pressed for, I would just say, like these top four to kind of have somebody else enter the conversation.
I think so too. I think these are like the clear top four jobs in the country. All time, the Carolina Duke rivalry is 114 or 141 and 114 in favor of North Carolina. So
don't they always throw up that graphic, like the last 20 games, the score is 1,072 to 1,071. It's like, I don't know who's keeping these stats handy and ready to go. But yeah, it's their, I don't want to say interchangeable because they'll go nuts that one's a public school, one's a private school, and we have this, and you have that. But you can't escape each other when you're on Tobacco Road and so close.
Yeah. It's crazy that two of the top four jobs in the country are this close to one another, just in terms of like geography.
And students hang out at the different schools too. It's wild.
Yeah. Okay. The top job's Kentucky.
Oh, I had to boo you. I had to give you some reaction because people probably knew it was coming.
Yeah. I mean, just everything that you could want. They pay John Calipari $11,100 million a year.
All the money. Yeah.
Do you know what John Calipari's buyout is?
I do, because I looked at it previous to us going on the air, but I'll let you unveil it because of the absurdity of the $11 million that he makes per year.
Yeah, John Calipari's buyout's $54 million.
There's got to be some language in there where you can wiggle out of it, but that's got to be comforting knowing that that's what it takes to get you out of there.
Yeah, John Calipari, $54 million buyout. Shout out, John Calipari. Just flexing on everyone. Yeah. I mean, look, Rupp Arena, incredible home court advantage, incredibly like rabid, unbelievable fan base. They're trying to pay Orlando Antigua $1 million a year to be an assistant there. They were paying Kenny Payne $1 million a year to be an assistant there. Every single amount of money that you could want, every single dollar, every single recruiting budget, every single assistant pool dollar that you could want, you've got it at Kentucky. Every amenity in terms of facility, every amenity in terms of like nutrition and whatever you're looking for, like it's Kentucky. Like it's unbelievable.
They were second in attendance, just by like 1,000 off to Syracuse, for highest in the country for seasons. 31 first round picks under John Calipari, 19 in the lottery. They're in the SEC, have the 8 national championships, and the fans really, the support is crazy. And I say that because I played there during the Tubby Smith era, 2000 whatever, 6 or so. And two things really stuck out to me. First, they have like a program that you buy or whatever that has the pregame stats, and they have like a page for donors. And if you go to like some schools, the page will be like, I don't know, 5 names or whatever. They have like the tiniest print ever and squeeze like 1 million names into like 5 pages. Like that's how much people care about giving back to the program. We went and they weren't very good at the time. They still beat us by 20, but it was like 60 minutes to go on the clock. Normally you get out there shooting around. There's, you know, a few people there, some ticket takers, guys selling popcorn. It's filled. Like the place is wild. They have pyrotechnics. They have smoke shows, smoke going off everywhere. It's just an incredible atmosphere at Rupp Arena. And when they're good, they're a little bit louder. When they're bad, they'll still be loud and let you know. And they're not going anywhere.
Last, let's go back to 1930. at Kentucky.
We're in like the 30s and 50s today. It's pretty good.
Yeah, 1930 and 1972 is Adolph Rupp, like, you know, legendary all-time coach. 1972 to 85 is Joby Hall. Joby Hall won a national championship. Eddie Sutton gets the job in 1985 for 4 years. Elite Eight, I believe, in the first year, and then was 25-5 in the third or fourth year, and then like had the like scandal or whatever, and they had a two season postseason ban, like all that thing. Next is Rick Pitino. Rick Pitino won a national title, correct? Yeah, Pitino won a title, right?
Yeah.
I'm like losing my mind here for a second. Next is Tubby Smith. Tubby Smith won a title. Next is Billy Gillespie, which bad, very bad. Yeah, Billy Gillespie was the wrong hire there. What a disaster. And then John Calipari, 2009 to present, obviously has won a title, been to many Final Fours, and has built Kentucky into the one and done brand that it is now. So just ridiculous. Like, it's absolutely unbelievable that since 1930, they've had one blip, basically, in terms of it not working at Kentucky. It's just, it's the best job in the country, I think.
They also expect it to work, though, too. I mean, they want you to win Final Fours. They prefer national championships. And even when you have 25 wins, they're going to let you know about those five losses. And if you lost in Sweet 16 and you had all this talent, all these first-round guys, why don't you do more? So you do have to live with that and knowing that. It's definitely Camelot. But the fans there expect they expect Camelot on the back end, too. They want championships.
Yeah. Just absolutely insane, in my opinion. Okay, that's the top 25 list. Who is going to yell at us most?
Oh, I haven't really. We've done mostly draft stuff, so people for the most part are pretty nice and pretty pleasant. I'm guessing this is a different world for me. Maybe for you, I don't know. NC State probably. I don't think Louisville fans will be that mad about where they are. Maybe Indiana. Like, I don't think there's going to be any deep state like UCLA fans mad about where they are.
Yeah,
I don't know which one do you kind of think?
You could tell me Syracuse fans are upset at 20. I think NC State fans will be mad. Wisconsin and Purdue fans, I think, are the sneaky ones that.
Yeah, some Big really Ten. There's a lot of Big Ten love, and they weren't really mentioned in the same category, right. I guess.
Yeah, I have some concerns, but. This was fun. This is a perfect like downtime, like in the middle of like, you know, draft prospects just starting to work out. And also after the NCAA season, in the middle of the coaching carousel or right at the end of the coaching carousel, just kind of a perfect little downtime activity, I felt like, for us to do on the podcast.
It was sort of like somebody dropped an idea in the ideas box and we just read it and said, let's do that. It's good. Had the conversation. Me too. Let's do it. Let's do the ideas box.
It's amazing. It's my favorite thing on the planet. Penny, tell the people what's going on in your life.
What's going on in my life? Just trying to gear up here for July, live period dates, stuff being lifted. Know more about that in the next few weeks. But for the time being, I'm beating my head watching old game film and G League Ignite and Euro League and trying to just keep up on all the draft happenings on Twitter, Matt_Penny. I'm there. I'm available. Don't yell at us too much. A little bit's good. Not too much.
Go see Matt at one of his events and yell at him, please.
Yeah, you can do that. Hey, dummy, NC State should be 15. All right, man. Good to see you.
He's the tall one. He'll be.
Yeah, you'll find me.
I'm the tall one on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Oh my god, this has been the Game Theory Podcast. Please remember, rate, review, subscribe. I have a few things that have come out over the past week and weekend, and I think I have to file a mock draft early next week, which that'll be enjoyable. Thank you for listening. Hopefully you don't yell at us too much. Until next time, though, we'll talk soon. Bye.